everybody. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. I'm recording this show on Thursday, March 16th, 2017, from Sacramento, California. I'm at the beginning of my two-week whirlwind speaking trip. I'm later leaving in a couple hours for Philadelphia and then on to other parts. Charlotte, St. Louis, Austin, you can go onto my website and you can see the rest of my schedule, eveharrow.com. But I'm right now in the living room of Dale Deber, who is the one who brought me out here. And last night I spoke at the Chabad house in this area to a very eclectic audience about Israel, about the things that they don't know about Israel. So it was really interesting. But I wanted you guys to hear from Dale himself because he has made some, major changes. I don't know how you want to say it, in the last few years. And not surprisingly, Israel was really, to a great degree, the catalyst. So first of all, Dale, thank you so much, for becoming a really, really good friend, like family, and also for organizing my trip out here.
Eve, first, welcome to America. So strange to see you here. I see you on all of my trips to Israel, and I remember meeting you literally within 2 or 3 hours of arriving in Israel the first time with wife and our two college-aged kids.
Mm-hmm. Was that 5 years ago?
I think it was six years ago.
Wow.
Six or seven, actually. Let's see, the younger one's been out of school 2 years, so it's at least 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And
what do you do? Let's give everybody
So we'll get all that up front. I'm a journalist and publisher, and our specialty is California politics and occupational health and safety, not exactly the most sexy subject. And as you know, now, because of you and because of that first trip, a lot about the Middle East. So I want to, besides welcoming you here, I want to thank you.
Okay.
For changing my life. What an amazing thing. I know that we had Eve as a tour guide, and when we decided to come to Israel, as you might remember, we called some friends in Israel and said, you know, we want to get a guide. We didn't want to go on a big tour and mm-hmm. in a bus with a zillion people. We wanted to show our children the real Israel, not that we knew it, but that we knew that we could do that not on a tour with, we didn't want propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wrote to one of our friends by email, and he asked me what kind of tour guide I wanted. And recommended you, and we contacted, and then you and I spoke pretty much every week for the 3 or 4 months developing the trip.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you asked me, what did I want to see? And I didn't know enough to know what I wanted to see.
Now, how does that happen? All right, you're born into a Jewish family,
yep.
right? And you were close to how old at that time?
I was in my 50s.
You're in your 50s, and you hadn't come to Israel. Like, where were you in terms of your connection to your faith or to what was going on in your life?
I was secular, more than anything else. We attended a reform, I hate to use the word temple, a reform mm-hmm. organization,
mm-hmm.
But there was no there. And so, you know, my connection was knowing that I was Jewish and knowing that Israel was so important. And frankly, having sort of a sixth sense about those things that are so strongly important to me today, which I know we're going to get to in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So from secular Jew to religious Jew in 6 years, observant Jew.
But you'd been looking for faith before that.
Well, you know,
just not in Judaism.
As a kid, well, you know, when we are raised in my generation, which came right after World War II,
mm-hmm.
Our parents wanted us to assimilate. So we didn't get taught the Yiddish that they spoke.
Well, if there are no Jews and there are no Nazis and there's no murders
of
Jews.
You know, if we're Americans, we're Americans. Mm-hmm. And so we really were American more than we were Jewish. Mm-hmm. And I never really thought of myself as anything but American. And as a youngster searching for something, I hated, I had a bar mitzvah. I hated the process. It was traumatic and frankly turned me away from Judaism rather than bringing me closer, like I see kids being brought in mm-hmm. now. And it can be so positive. It was interesting because as part of my son making Aliyah, I had to put together all of the paperwork to prove my Judaism. And so I went to Denver to where I grew up to get paperwork, and ended up meeting with an Orthodox rabbi who had come to Denver since I left. And in our conversation, he asked, because I was looking for my bar mitzvah papers and my bris papers mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And the synagogue that did all of that for me had been absorbed into another one, and they didn't have the paperwork. But in the conversation, the rabbi said, who was your rabbi? Who was your cantor? Who was your... Mm-hmm. And we spoke about the... and I actually have spoken often about how horrible that bar mitzvah experience was. And, you know, when that was over, I was done. Right. I didn't want any more part of it. And he said that that particular cantor who educated mm-hmm. us managed to accomplish that for... you know, half of Denver. And later, as we looked for, we wanted to send our kids to Catholic high schools because they're values-based. And frankly, here in Sacramento and in the area, they were the most, the best schools. Mm-hmm. And they were Jesuit schools as opposed to normal Catholic schools. And in order to attend, you have to be a family of faith. And we weren't. So what were we going to do? Well, we'll bar mitzvah the kids. We'll do something. And as part of that process, what I found is that Jewry is uncooperative, especially if you have kids whose mom is not Jewish. Very interesting process. They'd rather drive you away than
Judaism.
Kindle Judaism mm-hmm. than kindle the
well,
flame
according
of Judaism.
To halakha, to Jewish law, if your mom is Jewish, you're Jewish, and if not, not.
Nevertheless,
so that's where you went. That's what you stepped into.
That's what we stepped into, and so it was very interesting process. And there was a point at which I said, "Okay, that's it. We can't be Jewish." Mm-hmm. And I sent a fairly angry email to every Jew in my email list, which is a lot. 5 minutes later, I received a call from my friend and my appellate counsel in Los Angeles, an Orthodox Jew, who said, "Don't do anything weird. We will do this bar mitzvah. So you're not a rabbi, so you don't need a rabbi. Mm-hmm. And we'll call you in a week." And in a week, he and his wife called us with a plan. And the plan was, you're going to study every week. So little did I, and you're going to come to our house in Los Angeles for every Jewish holiday. I thought, how many could there be?
Oh, you really didn't know anything, did you?
And so, you know, I'm thinking, well, there's Pesach, there's, you know, and boy, did I not know. And so we spent half our life that year in Los Angeles at their home. Mm-hmm. But we spent every Sunday morning having read the Parsha.
And portion of the week.
The portion of the week. And a lot of other stuff that they had us do. They had a very interesting idea. And what their idea was to spend the year... what I told them is, look, I don't want to do this and have my kids hate it. Mm-hmm. We need to give them meaning. Mm-hmm. And they need to have some understanding in order to have meaning. But meaning is the first goal.
And this is in order to get them into the Jesuit Catholic school.
In order to get them into Catholic school.
Okay.
So the worst possible motivation.
Right.
And in order to get them bar mitzvahed mm-hmm. and bat mitzvahed.
Right.
And so what they did is they brilliantly, and Greg and Andy, when you hear this,
yes,
brilliantly approached this through the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever holiday was next is where we started.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an amazing experience with them, first of all, to spend so much time with such committed
devoted
mm-hmm. Jewish people who were modern Orthodox. And so we were exposed for the first time to normative Judaism.
Like to family Judaism.
Well, to family Judaism, to what Judaism really is, as opposed to what the Reform mm-hmm. have, you know, it's sort
kind of
like,
watered it down.
Well, there's no there in my view, so mm-hmm. I don't want to attack all my Reform friends, of whom I have many, but, you know, it's sort of like going to a kosher-style delicatessen
mm-hmm.
and having, you know, a sandwich with meat and mm-hmm. cheese, as opposed to going to a kosher delicatessen. It's just not the same.
Mm-hmm. And so it was like a rite of passage, not just for your son this bar mitzvah week, this bar mitzvah year, but for your entire family.
And we're being joined now in our living room by Zoe the cat. So if you hear her meowing...
Well, I think it's because there's a little fluffy thing on top of my recorder that looks very much like a mouse.
It's maybe
and
that.
I think that that's what distracted.
So she's going to add her piece as we go forward.
Okay, so he has his bar mitzvah.
So
now
we
you
spend
understand.
This year. We go through this year,
mm-hmm.
and we do it as a family.
Right.
And it's interesting. And it's meaningful, not just to kids, to mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, each week there was like this aha moment. Each week, mm-hmm. not even occasionally. And this is still, you know, people coming in. This is the first time we've done it. This is not anything particularly heavy.
Right.
And then we had their bar mitzvahs at our ranch up in the hills. And invited our friends and their friends, and you know our community, particularly in the where we lived, which is on a ranch. Our community was principally Christian,
mm-hmm.
and my family flew in, and some of Janet's family, and we had this our son's bar mitzvah in our forest, and my daughter's bat mitzvah as she gave her speech with a red-tailed hawk circling above
wow,
her.
Wow, that's cool.
And I kept telling we're going to do this in English. We're not going to do this in Hebrew. I don't know what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I do in retrospect, but you know what a difference. I refused to let, you know, these kids are studying languages in school, and why add another
one?
Well,
I happen to know your daughter is an expert in ancient Greek.
Yes, she is, and a couple of other languages. As it turns out, she has that.
But not Hebrew.
But not Hebrew.
Not Hebrew, yeah.
And so, big mistake. But, you know, we grow and we learn and we do it sometimes too late. And,
it's never too late.
So it was kind of an interesting experience. And then off my son goes, gets accepted and goes off to Jesuit high school. And we're a little concerned about that. But yet he came through Jesuit school, mm-hmm. not a diocesan school, so I really need to be clear, as a better Jew. They forced them to do, force is probably the wrong word, the kids as part of their regular studies have a class in Bible and religion. It's just one of the classes that they do. And so we were a little bit concerned about that, but... Clay had a Jewish study Bible, and they would ask him the Jewish view of all of these things, and he would come home, and we would talk about it, and sometimes the eyes would roll, and
well, sometimes... Can you explain a little bit about Jesuit, because there's a lot of different streams of Christianity as there are of Judaism?
So Jesuit is a clearly Catholic sect.
Okay.
So there's it really. I mean, the first thing they'll say is their Catholic priests were callers and are unmarried and all of that, and they're just the intellectual part of the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. I've now probably angered all the rest of the Catholics, but and they have a different hierarchy in the church than they have their own sort of management and political system inside the Catholic Church all the way through. And they're much flatter, actually pretty fun. It's pretty interesting. And
but Clay gets through there without...
Clay gets through there
not feeling
a better Jew.
Really? Fascinating. You took a big risk.
And Whitney, through her group, boys school, one girl school. And Whitney gets through a better Jew.
And what does that mean, a better Jew?
Well...
How do you define that? Because not in terms of your day-to-day.
It is in terms of our day-to-day. Because they came out seeing God in the world.
Ah. So they came out people of faith.
They came out people of faith.
Okay.
And it wasn't destroyed. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't...
So the Jesuits taught them about God.
And they didn't come out believing in Jesus or, you know, in any of the Christian things. Which, you know, would have been okay if that's what they did, but they didn't. And even better from a Jewish father's perspective. And, but they see God in the world, both of them. And, I think that that's something that's so different than had they had a public school experience, even in our fairly well-to-do neighborhood where the schools are, you know, don't have the problems of the inner city and the parents are involved and the kids actually do their homework and show up fed and all of that stuff. You know, they would come out, they would have, as we have seen from many of their friends, they come out very secular kids and then they go to college and it, you know, it's
beaten, it continues on.
It's,
it's
beaten out of them in the colleges.
One of the things that surprised me over the last few years, especially talking to Christians in America, is how many of them are homeschooling their kids.
They're so smart to do that.
Total to other discussion. They just don't feel that the school system is giving the religious values that they want for their kids. Yeah.
It's not just the religious. I don't think that it's the place of a public school in the United States. Different. I feel completely different about Israel. Schools in the United States should be secular, but they're not secular. What they are is anti-Christian and anti-Jewish. They're not secular. They don't not discuss religion or allow a kid to go and pray, unless a Muslim kid, or give a kid off for, you know, for Catholics have a lot of holidays.
Right. So they're anti-God.
So they're anti-God as opposed to... and their teachers are anti-God because you've got this whole sort of this stream of educators who have over the last several generations been pushed more and more away from God, more and more towards the left, which of course wants to worship the state instead of God. And frankly, you've pushed one of my buttons because... What's happening here in America, and I see this because I travel outside of America, and I see this because I'm so involved in issues in Israel and of the Middle East in general. So I'm very aware of what's happened in Europe and what's happening in Europe, and what's about to happen, I'm afraid, in the United States. That what we're seeing is, rather than a resurgence in faith, rather than families giving their children, and it has to start, I'm a Jewish person, this is a family thing that it begins with, rather than teaching at home that there's something bigger than you and that we must believe in it. And I want to be very inclusive here with our Christian brothers and sisters, because it's in so many ways we share morals and ethics And
well, Bible people are Bible people.
Believers are believers.
Exactly.
Sure. And so we're so common in our belief, and particularly, you know, with our prime belief, the golden rule. So love mm-hmm. others as we love ourselves. Mm-hmm. My first prayer every morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I take that upon myself hard some days.
Right. So you're saying that's been kind of subcontracted out to the schools who dropped the ball. They've got their own agenda.
What's happened is, as people have become, as people have gone through the schools in the United States, particularly since the 60s, so we've graduated three generations that are progressively less religious,
mm-hmm.
which incidentally means progressively more to the political left. And whether that's coincidental or not, I don't think it is, but some people mm-hmm. might argue that. But as that happens, our foundation, I don't want to put religion on our founders because they were so careful to make this country a secular country for all religions, but grounded in
well,
faith.
On the money, it says in God we trust.
And, I mean, but grounded
America
in faith.
Is
exactly.
founded as a country open to all religions.
Exactly.
It's not communism that wants to stamp out all religions. It's quite the opposite.
And that,
you are free to be whatever religion you want to be or not.
Exactly.
That's the freedom of America.
And that is the freedom of America. And what the founders were wise in doing is saying, we're not going to have a government religion. We're not going to
separation
say
of church and state. Right.
We're not a Christian country or a Jewish country mm-hmm. or a deist country or a mm-hmm. Muslim country or whatever. We're here for everyone. And so the government properly should stand out of religion in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
I want a religious monarchy. I'm probably over the edge. But
we've created a monster.
You've created a monster. And you did it. I think that this is what's happened in America, and this is what we're seeing.
Well, so given what you've just said, it shouldn't come as any surprise what's happening on the campuses. It's just really the culmination of 50 years of that kind of education. Maybe it was inevitable that the campuses would then become a bastion of that kind of thinking.
They're completely, it's completely reversed from when we were in college, where the campuses were bastions of everybody's free speech, not
safe places, and you can't say anything except for one particular
line. It's 1984 proper think. This is what we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing, I was reading an article earlier this morning with, they're putting posters up in UC schools, University of California, for those of you around the world. Which has a whole bunch of campuses and some very prestigious schools like UCLA and Berkeley.
Tax paid, by the way.
Paid for by taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's expensive to put your kid in there, too, unless you're an illegal alien in California, in which case you get to go for free. But we call them dreamers now. And their posters, that's where I was going, these posters that are saying, check your white privilege, but before you do that, check your Jewish privilege.
Wow.
I mean, just outright, overt anti-Semitism.
They couldn't do that with any other group, ethnic group.
They couldn't.
Can you imagine saying Hispanic or black or gay or anything? Wow.
And yet the Hispanics and the blacks and the gays aren't standing up for us.
Right.
And so we're going to see this anti-Semitism grow in the United States as part of what I like to refer to as the leftist Islamic alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And as they take God away, this is they're going to replace it. You know, the left is going to replace it with this sort of Bernie Sanders socialism, and they're aligned with the Muslims for one reason, which is that they both want to tear down the country and have their own thing. And the left is going to get a big surprise
Right.
When, you know, when and if this succeeds.
When they turn out to be the useful idiots when, that we all, many of us see that they are.
When the Islamics just kill them first.
Mm-hmm.
Because they will kill the people with no faith before they kill the people of faith.
Wow. Amazing.
So.
So getting back to you, because it's still, you know, and I've known you now for a few years, and you've changed my life and so many things that I've learned from you, from your family, from the, you know, the struggles that you have had here in not as a young person, really making great changes in your life. And when I first met you in Israel, I try and explain to people that Israel's not just a trip. Israel's an emotional experience, first and foremost. I think that something happens in that country to virtually everybody. Not necessarily positive or negative. It just, something happens. There is like a little opening to something that can only happen there. It's almost like falling into a rabbit hole. I don't know.
Well, I think, and I have to speak for what can happen to Jews, but this is our DNA. This is everything. And I think after I was there a week, you know, it was very interesting when, and I think by analogy, I can tell this story better. My wife's family are Methodists and fairly religious, fairly faithful people. So I have cousins and who are that. And we, after we came back from Israel the first time, of course, they all wanted to hear about Israel. And there's a little family reunion incidentally to that. And I heard that one of them asked Janet, how was Israel? And Janet said, well, it was wonderful. I learned so much and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I'm more comfortable in America.
Mm-hmm.
And she was standing with her back to me. And I turned around and put my arm around her and said, you know, I didn't know it until I got to Israel, but that's how I feel in America. So for Jews in America,
that's how you feel in America about,
I feel like a stranger in a strange land.
Oh.
So
she is a Methodist is saying it was a wonderful country to visit Israel, but home is America.
And for me, having been to Israel the first week,
right.
Israel was home.
It was
home.
Like a homecoming for you.
And because people were like me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was never a feeling that I had. And so I think that spark of Hasidus, as the mm-hmm. Chabad people will say, the spark of Judaism, it gets ignited.
Yeah,
it's not that it gets ignited. It's exactly that it's
there.
Fanned
it gets fanned
by realizing there really are other people,
and there's a place. It's
and
not
a place.
Now there. You know, I mean, there's always been the place, but we haven't had access to it for a long time. And now there's the place.
Exactly, the biblical ingathering of the Jews is real.
Oh, yeah. You're seeing it. But when you came to Israel, you told me at the time that you weren't coming on a religious or spiritual journey.
No,
that totally blindsided you. You told me you were coming because your kids were in college and you were not happy with the experiences that they were having there. Everybody's pro-Palestinian and pro-this and pro-that. And you wanted to get them, at least for a couple weeks, to be in Israel and to maybe that way see another side of it. They're both super bright kids, and you were hoping that they would get that to some degree on their campuses. They were only being told one side.
So I think I remember asking you for the reality trip,
mm-hmm.
and which we got delivered.
Oh, you did, yeah.
And we were at the border of Gaza. We were at the border of Lebanon. We were in the Golan Heights. We were in Hebron. We got the reality trip.
And you just walked around and saw everybody. I mean, they're here in apartheid state and racism, yet they're walking down the street and seeing people of all colors interacting with each other, coexisting, having coffee, and the lies that they were being told were just shredded in front of their faces.
It was amazing. And I remember seeing the face of my daughter as we were driving around beyond the Green Line, and we stopped and looked at signs that said no Jews beyond this point.
Right, right.
And I think that's when, you know, that light bulb goes on that it's not the Jews doing the apartheid,
mm-hmm.
it's the Arabs.
Right.
And I think at that point, you know, we had a successful trip. That was the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And both kids are still Yeah, as you know, my son has made Aliyah.
Yeah, and he's going through a conversion process.
And going
now.
Through conversion, which is, you know, fabulous. Mom likes it, dad likes it, he likes it. And
we're going to find him a nice Jewish girl at
well,
some point.
Well, the sooner the better. And I suspect he's going to be a late bloomer. And he's aged over automatic army. And mm-hmm. so he's sort of having a fight with the army to get in.
Mm-hmm.
And he's pretty determined. So we expect that will happen. Sometimes that's scary for a father, obviously.
Of course.
As a mom with
I know
all those kids.
Yeah.
That have been through
and the
that.
Son in the army right now. Yeah.
So,
but it's also a tremendous feeling of, you know, that we can protect ourselves is no small thing. You look around the world today, you see how many people cannot protect themselves. Being able to protect ourselves is a huge gift, a huge blessing.
And he feels
take
so
it
strongly.
For granted. Yeah.
About his new country.
Yeah. Yeah. And his new people. It's like a whole world that opened to him. And I'm grateful for the fact, and I don't take it for granted, that his first entry into the Jewish people is by saying, I want to protect everybody too. You know, not this sense of entitlement, like you take care of me, but I'm coming in by taking care of you. And as an Israeli, I'm tremendously grateful to that. Do not take that for granted. This is not how he necessarily grew up. And I think that's, you know, that's marvelous.
I think, well, we didn't raise them as Jewish American princesses and mm-hmm. princes. They were not spoiled kids.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, they were raised on a ranch and had
right.
to take care of animals and
yes.
do all the ranch things. And
I've seen his spice farm out there.
And so I'm glad it's only spice. And but so it's been a wonderful trip personally. The spiritual development, I know you wanted me to talk about that, has been from Reform,
mm-hmm.
where we went on Friday nights and had a nice community, but no religiosity. No,
mm-hmm.
there was no spiritual side to it. And I went to Torah study every week, having being all prepared, and just came away
right.
week after week with nothing.
Right. There's a community, but not necessarily more to that.
And so I sort of picked the five or six of the smartest guys from that Saturday morning
mm-hmm.
and said, you know, we have a world-class, at that point, we had a world-class Orthodox, modern Orthodox rabbi. And said, you know what, why don't we study twice a week? I'll volunteer our house. We'll
mm-hmm.
put up the, you know, the cheese and crackers
right.
And get him to come and do this. And he agreed. And I was so lost. He was far heavier
mm-hmm.
than I was prepared for. Some of my friends got it. And as this progressed over 5 or 6 or 7 months, it became more and more fascinating. I started learning how Orthodox thinks a little bit differently. The thought
oh, yeah.
process is very different. Far more open, I
mm-hmm.
might say, than the Reform, who basically believe in liberality,
mm-hmm.
political liberalism, as opposed to religious liberalism. And
I'm trying to explain to people that the way liberal is now defined is not really liberal.
No, it isn't at all. It's very close.
And I said that last night when I was speaking at the Chabad. I mean, I consider myself a real liberal because I have learned to listen to people, not necessarily to agree with them, that's for sure, but to listen to them and to respect the fact that those are their opinions and that their way of life is not, for them, is not necessarily worse than mine. And a lot of times Westerners are out there, democracy and we're talking to people for whom that's not the be all and end all. And they've got traditions and they've got a way of life that, you know, we can't sit and impose ours on. I think it's probably, just to jump into politics for 1 second, because I really don't want this to be a political interview. I think that's a mistake that the West has made when it comes to the Middle East. It's trying to overthrow these regimes and impose democracy on people who don't know what the heck they're
well,
talking
you can't,
about.
You can't impose democracy until people are prepared for democracy. That's a process.
Yeah.
It's not a you know, we saw that You know, as you know, I'm on the right, and so I'm going to feel free to criticize the right. We saw that with the Bush-Rice doctrine, where they imposed democracy on Gaza, and we got Hamas, and they imposed democracy on
Iraq, and we got ISIS, ultimately.
And we got ISIS, and they imposed democracy, you know, on the PLO, and we have a guy in the 11th year of his four-year term.
Right.
So, you know, it failed.
Yes.
And it's failed consistently. Of course, with Iraq, what President Bush forgot was his history. Had we done something like the Marshall Plan, like we did after World War II in Germany and
in Japan,
particularly in Japan, we could have had a very successful country there. And instead, we have the world burning, literally,
yes,
all over the world,
yeah.
Because Iran has taken advantage of that situation.
Well, Iran's taken over Iraq
in many ways.
Yeah, and but what a lot of people, I think, fail to realize is that those who are suffering the most are the ones in the Middle East. I mean, when you have these terrible regimes, their own people suffer first. Eventually, they come out towards Israel and America and 9/11 and jihadist, all kinds of incidences all over Europe. But really, the people who suffer the most are their own. And, you know, as an Israeli, my heart bleeds for the Syrian women and the Yazidis and the Iraqi women, especially the women, but not only, and the children and everybody. It's been a big mess.
What Americans don't understand is how the Christians are being ethnically cleansed.
Right.
Cleansed all over the Middle East.
Right.
In Iraq, in Egypt, in Egypt's fairly moderate at the moment.
All in comparison to their neighbors,
And, you know, all over the Middle East,
we're
seeing the Christians mass slaughtered
really
in big numbers. And, you know, where America, you know, what, you know, if there's one thing we should do is, you know, stop this. And they're just incapable. And Congress is incapable. And but Congress is incapable because Americans don't understand that.
Well, I think there's something more here, and I've said this actually to Christians, is that, you know, when it comes to Jews, wherever we're hurting all over the world, Jews will feel connected. The rabbi said this in his opening last night, that even if you're living in Sacramento, you feel connected to Israel. You feel connected to Jews wherever they are. And I found a lack of that when it comes to Christians. When I'll talk to Christians and say, but your co-religionists are being persecuted in Egypt, or the Maronites, or the Copts, you know, the Coptic Christians. Where are you? And there's this uncomfortable dead silence. And I think what we take for granted as Jews, that sense of peoplehood, no matter where and what, I'm not so sure.
Across all of our sects.
Across all of our very different, you know, traditions. I don't know if Christians, because there isn't like that common history, the I saw you at Sinai kind of history, that I don't know if Christians feel that way towards other Christians. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure that they don't. And that's been something that has come out, I think, in the last few years also. But you've come back to Israel, and this was that first trip
back,
stirred your pot.
I think 8 times.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to miss this year because of our family move out of California, but I'll be there next year. And someday permanently. And I think that for me, Israel is home. There's no other home for me. Now, that does not make me less of a loyal American. I think that's very important to say. I'm American. But I'm also Israeli. And in that sense of being a citizen of kind of two countries, in that sense, I think that American Jews generally don't have that strong a connection. Religious Jews, yes.
To Israel. Right. It's getting less and less, according to the polls.
But of our 6.5 million Jews in the United States, a Pew study said that 60% of them replied that their life wouldn't change if Israel was gone.
Wow.
And I mean, these are people who at least hopefully go somewhere once a week and pray about Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
So, you know, as an Israeli, I think, so then why are you in any way trying to affect policy in my country if my country then was
exactly.
wiped off the map and you couldn't care less?
Exactly.
So then just stay out of it.
Exactly. But then
but
again,
I can't say that. So
you know, well, you should say that. And, yeah. and I think it's appropriate to say that. And as an American, I'm very careful about how I speak about Israelis and what I think should happen. As you know, I'm involved in an Israeli political party.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sort of on the ground in Israel in a different way than most Americans. But
look, what I do, which is why I'm here in the States, is instead of just writing off American Jewry or Christians or saying, you know, like, just don't, just butt out of Israel, I want people to understand what's happening in Israel. I desperately want people to understand what's happening in Israel because I think that it is the as we could say, I say, the trailer for the movie about what's going to happen in the West. I firmly believe that what happens to the Jewish people is the marker for what's going to happen to others, in a good sense and in a bad sense. And right now, obviously, the focus is more on the dangers. And so, like, last night, here we are in a Chabad synagogue, which is very, very Orthodox. Most of the people there, though, not...
Not at all.
Not at all. Yet they came and asked a lot of questions and seemed to be really interested and understood that they don't understand, which is the beginning of really, you know, of understanding to make any sense whatsoever. Is to know what you don't know.
I think it was fabulous last night to see who came and how they, I knew a lot of the people. And I think that, you know, we have an interesting Jewish community in Sacramento, in that we have a small group of people across the Reform community. Our Reform community is far bigger than our religious community. We have mm-hmm. we have 40 or 50 Frum families, Orthodox families in Sacramento.
Well, that's probably pretty standard, except for the major cities in the U.S., the Los Angeles, New York greater area, maybe
that's
Chicago. I would say that that's pretty much the story of the Jewish communities all over
and
the
it's
West,
hard,
the Western world.
It makes it harder to be
yes.
Orthodox and
well,
religious.
Getting
you know,
kosher
I mean,
food,
we can't get,
or, right?
Exactly.
Right.
We have no kosher restaurants. We have no kosher
butcher
or baker.
Yeah.
So it becomes very difficult
mm-hmm.
to do this.
And not to mention ways, educating your kids. I mean, your kids are already in college, but anybody who comes to a city outside, like I said, of those major areas, is going to have a hard time getting Jewish education for their kids.
We had a bar mitzvah a week ago. We have a really bright 13-year-old boy who announced he's going to go to yeshiva in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
What a fabulous thing. I'm kind of sorry I didn't send my kids there. I didn't know enough. Mm-hmm. My wife kind of looks askance when I say that. But I think it, for our family, we really want to be with our kids. And
yeah, and most families do. Most yeah. people don't want to send their kids away. At 13. Yeah. I mean, I see how hard it is for you with, you know, I mean, with as much as you're happy that your son is in Israel now and trying to join the army and convert to Judaism, he's physically far.
He
it's
is.
A sacrifice.
Well, we talk, we,
yeah.
we,
right.
we talk on, you know,
right. all the modern equipment.
All the modern equipment. I don't want to give
but
a plug,
still,
but,
yeah.
And it is hard and it's hard. We have a daughter who's moved out of state and mm-hmm. so we talk to her, but. And it's always fun to talk to all of them, and it's kind of fun to be an empty nester.
Mm-hmm.
We've now done this for a couple of years, and so mom and dad are having, you know, a whole
right.
renaissance in many ways, and so that's kind of nice too. So our life cycle is changed, but religiously, which is what I know you wanted to talk about, having moved from Reform to Modern Orthodox, remember we were talking about the rabbi who came to our
yes.
house. So one night he talked about being mindful.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a light bulb moment for me because that was the word, that's what I didn't know how to enunciate. I didn't know how to say what was missing. And when he said mindful, you know, before we said our kids see God in the world,
mm-hmm.
I knew he was out there. But I didn't know how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the mindfulness of being able to wake up and say a prayer
right.
to, and I know the non-religious people will laugh, but to say a prayer after you go to the bathroom. And I want to say that that prayer has to do with
all
of the parts going in and coming out working. And a lovely prayer. And
well, it's a constant sense of gratitude and humbleness and a lack of entitlement. I have what I have, not because I deserve it, but because God decided I should have it. And Judaism on that level brings God into our daily lives. He's not some like far off thing. He's in even the most mundane things, exactly. Like going to the bathroom. But really, because our bodies, I mean, we're all miracles. I have a son in medical school now who said to me that it makes no sense in anybody's ever born healthy. There's so many things that can go wrong. And so if we see it that way, and if we take it for granted, then you see God in your own life and in the world.
It is amazing. And, you know, when I remember as a young person seeing a Christian family in a restaurant hold hands and say a prayer before they ate.
Right.
Of course, for me at that time, I rolled my eyes. I thought, oh, God, that was silly.
Right.
But I do it before I eat anything now.
Exactly.
And so it's... You know, you stop at some point in the afternoon and have, you know, 10 minutes to just be calm and to pray.
Say thank you.
And, you know, there's another thing that happens at that point, something I learned from the Jesuits, which is you can review a piece of your day and think, and it's an instant feedback. You know, what did I do right?
Mm-hmm.
What did I do wrong? Where did I find God? Where should I have found God that I don't find? You know, and that relationship with the world, I think, has really changed how I am. Not who I am. I didn't get a personality transplant,
mm-hmm.
much to
the dismay of some
of many
people.
Yeah, but that process is requires discipline. Hard for an ADD guy, but it also, that discipline provides discipline in my professional discipline as a journalist. It provides me discipline because the pattern. And so
that's so interesting.
It's very interesting.
That you're becoming a more traditional Jew has changed you, how you perform professionally and
professionally.
In every way.
Well, I'm a journalist. And so I have to live every day saying something bad about somebody.
Mm-hmm.
The news is, you know, only the news because it's new. And, you know, frequently somebody's done something bad or something horrible has happened. And, you know, I'm not flippant about...
There's ways of framing it.
Mm-hmm. Framing it. Sometimes, you know, one chooses to be more dramatic than other times. And you discover, particularly in we do investigative journalism, and so we discover frauds and stuff. And you have to be very clear that, you know, I can't make an accusation as a
right.
journalist, but I can present the facts. The
right.
accusations come from
right.
the prosecutors who frequently pick it up as a result of our work. But the fact is that, you know, we don't see that. And, you know, what you can see in American journalism, I get asked all the time, Dale, you know, you've been a journalist for 40 or 50 years. So I'm 67, so since I'm 17, mm-hmm. so however long that is. And why is the media so liberal? Or why is the media lying? And I laugh. And this is this process that we talked about earlier in this interview of progressively more leftist
mm-hmm.
People who come out and whose viewpoint is so far to the left
right.
that their balance is off. And... And, you know, the first rule of journalism, the first thing you learn in J school is, you know, you're not the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about me. It's about whatever is happening.
Right.
And, you know, you watch TV. This week I try to watch a broad spectrum, not much TV, but I do watch a broad spectrum from... American audiences will understand MSNBC as mm-hmm. far left as it gets to Fox, which is reasonably to the
mm-hmm.
right, and to watch this debacle on both sides is just frightening. And I think that journalism is, real journalism is dying, the which is a shame. Mm-hmm. And this is what also is helping to bring America down. This is, I mean, you know, now you've got everybody being educated from a particular viewpoint, being told that they must think and say things a certain way.
Or it's not politically correct.
Well, what a horrible, frightening thing. Mm-hmm. I got invited to speak on a college campus, and on the phone with the kids, this is as a result of an appearance at a Jewish thing, the Stanford kids wanted me to come speak to their Jewish group. And after they talked to me on the phone, they said, you know, you can't speak like this on our campus.
Yeah. And campuses are supposed to be a place where you can say whatever and get people to think.
If I can't speak like this, I'm not coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just not going to do this. Right. And I can't do political correct, first of all. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't know how. And secondly, you know, I'm direct and precise and clear. And I'm not afraid to say the word homosexual or the word housewife, both of which are banned on many college campuses now.
Mm-hmm.
How can you ban housewife?
Right.
Well,
we're being told how to think.
And this is the danger. And then what happens is they get this in college, and then it gets brought home in the media and in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And in the music.
Right.
And so you really see the destruction of a whole Western culture, like we saw the destruction of Rome or Greece.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing.
Right.
Different.
And in that vacuum, though, will come something else. And that's what we have to.
That's what we.
Yeah.
That's what we're waiting for.
Right. Or not.
We see, you know, people in America absolutely do not believe what is happening in Europe. They are not aware. And when you sit down and say, you know, in France, Paris is surrounded by Islamics, and they'll just say no, it isn't. Just no. Yeah. They just you can't give them a fact that's believable.
Right.
3 years ago, one of my publishing groups, there's a listserv, and on that listserv, it's the sort of the marketing side instead of the editorial side, and somebody in Paris posted a little post about their fashion
mm-hmm.
publication. This is about 3 years ago, being for sale. And I responded by saying, as a business person, you know, I don't think this would be a wise mm-hmm. business investment given what's going on
in Paris.
You know, mm-hmm. fashion is going to be gone
mm-hmm.
in Paris. And, you know, this is 3 years ago. And I ended my piece by saying I expect to see the Louvre burn at the hands of the believers, which was about as direct as I could be. And of course, my liberal brothers and sisters were inflamed by such a statement. And I was removed from the listserv and put in listserv hell for a while. It's like Facebook's mm-hmm. you know, kicked off. I've never been, knock on wood, kicked off. And, you know, a month ago, and I'm back, of course, but a month ago, we saw the Louvre attacked.
Yeah. Yeah.
People
just are not aware.
And so they just are not seeing this, and they don't believe it when you hand them an absolute fact.
Right.
And this is the danger for America.
Right. And that's what I'm doing here, is trying to, through my Israeli perspective, because we live this every day, have people in the West understand that it can still be changed, but we have to wake up and you have to learn.
You want to close. I want to do a commercial for you. There is no other tour guide to call. I know that you do tours for Christians that are Christian oriented.
And actually, tours. I do tours for Christians that are Jewish-oriented.
And even better.
Yeah.
And tours for Jews. And, you know, folks, this is, I know she doesn't do this for the commercial, but I have to tell you, Eve changed my life. She will change yours. Christian, Jew, or nothing. And
It's Israel. It's Israel. I just get to be the channel.
You're the messenger.
It's great. Thank God in every way, really. It's been it's a great journey, and the road is still open. So thanks, Dale. I've got to hit the road to get to my next stop. Thank you, everybody. Thank Ben and Tabitha and everybody at the Land of Israel Network. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation, on the road in America. This was just a piece of it. Take care, everybody. Goodbye for now.